Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we open with our Capitol Report. Hear why California's Senator Padilla and other congressional Democrats are urging reversal of a federal hiring freeze that includes seasonal firefighters. Plus, learn why some federal workers are speaking out against demands being made by DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency. In Green Scene, learn how a mass firing of workers on our public lands is impacting national parks, forests, and monuments right here in California and across the nation. Locally, we have a special report on the Grossmont Union High School Board majority's decision to fire 49 teachers and administrators, including all high school librarians, despite objections from thousands of district residents, teachers, staff, and students. On Tribal Beat, the Hamul Casino is changing its name to Hamul Casino Resort, as it prepares to open a high-rise luxury hotel, spa, and other amenities in May. Disgraced former El Cajon City Councilman Ben Colosio was back in court remotely this past week, and a judge has ordered Colosio and his wife to appear in person in June to begin an 8-day jail sentence for contempt of court. County health officials are warning pet owners not to feed raw food to cats after an indoor house cat in East County died of the bird flu. On Destination East County, hear about some Merry March events coming up, including farm tours, a stargazing party, live music concerts, a spring fling business expo, tomato mania, daffodil days, St. Patrick's Day festivities, Nature Day on Mount Helix, a Pirates of Penzance production, a Desert Homes tour, and the Price of Right game show at Saquon. President Donald Trump ran on a pro-life platform, but many of his actions and policies are actually putting lives of babies and children at risk. We'll have details on our show today. Then, from Public News Service, the Yonder Report covers how a federal freeze on funding is impacting farmers, chaos on public lands due to staffing reductions, and why cuts to federal firefighting are putting communities at risk across the West. A groundbreaking for a new county public library in Casa de Oro has recently been held. A lawsuit has been filed to halt offshore oil drilling, including along California's coast. A federal court has temporarily halted ICE immigration enforcement in some, but not all, places of worship. And the county is upgrading a safe parking site for the homeless in El Cajon. We'll have all of those stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
California Senator Alex Padilla has joined 14 other Democratic senators in urging senior Trump administration officials to reverse the hiring and onboarding freeze of federal seasonal firefighters that they say threatens the safety of communities in California and across the nation. The Trump administration's January 20th hiring freeze of federal civilian employees inexplicably did not exempt federal seasonal firefighters, despite exempting other critical public safety personnel. Federal seasonal firefighters risk their lives to protect communities and save lives. According to a press relief issued by Padilla, this hiring freeze is particularly dangerous as we ramp up staffing and training ahead of peak wildfire season. While Padilla secured a temporary pay raise for wildland firefighters in the bipartisan infrastructure law, recruitment and retention remain significant challenges as firefighters work long hours with insufficient pay. The attrition rate of firefighters at the U.S. Forest Service has been 45% over the past 4 years, making the hiring freeze at USFS, the Bureau of Land Management, and the National Park Service all the more dangerous. In their letter, the senators urged the Trump administration to immediately end the hiring freeze on seasonal firefighters, adding, "The bottom line is this. pausing the hiring and onboarding of federal seasonal firefighters while historic wildfires destroy communities and upend livelihoods across the West is simply irresponsible and dangerous. We will be woefully unprepared to fight the fires to come, and instead will continue to see record levels of damage, the senators warned, ultimately costing communities and taxpayers even more at a time when the cost of living is already too high. Wildfires are increasing in frequency and destructiveness in California and across the nation. Earlier this year, the devastating Southern California fires, including the Palisades and Eaton fires, burned over 57,000 acres and destroyed over 16,200 structures, claiming the lives of at least 29 victims. Nationally, nearly 65,000 fires burned 9 million acres in 2024, up from approximately 56,000 wildfires and 3 million acres in 2023. The rise in catastrophic wildfires demands even more seasonal firefighter hiring, not a freeze. Senator Padilla has consistently pushed to protect our wildland firefighting force. Last month, Padilla reintroduced the bipartisan Wildland Firefighter Paycheck Protection Act to protect the pay raise he secured for wildland firefighters in the bipartisan infrastructure law. In 2023, Padilla and a bipartisan group of senators urged Senate leadership to avoid mass resignations within the wildland firefighter ranks by ensuring the prompt passage of their bipartisan legislation. Padilla and a bipartisan group of senators also urged the Biden administration to establish a special pay rate for federal wildland firefighters to prevent staffing shortages and strengthen wildfire response efforts in 2022. Following that request, the Biden administration announced a temporary pay raise. Additionally, Padilla's Wildfire Emergency Act, announced last week, would establish a prescribed fire training center in the West and authorize grants to support training the next generation of foresters and firefighters, among other important fire mitigation efforts. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Federal workers say they are reeling after weeks of job cuts and a demand from Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency that workers justify their jobs. All federal workers received an email asking for 5 bullet points on what they accomplished last week. SpaceX and Tesla CEO Elon Musk, who has been given the unofficial power of overseeing the effort, said on social media that failure to respond would be taken as a resignation, and President Donald Trump reiterated that at a press conference on Monday. Dave, a worker at the Department of Veterans Affairs, who asked us not to use his real name, says it's been a stressful time.
There's definitely a fear wondering if our work ethics are good enough to remain on staff. Many of us have responded to the email, so we have followed directions, but it's still that sense of micromanagement that is making us feel very insecure.
Musk and the DOGE advisory group have claimed, without offering proof, that they have uncovered hundreds of billions of dollars in federal employee fraud, including paychecks issued to non-existent workers. DOGE faces legal challenges from unions, businesses, and advocacy groups. Amid an atmosphere of confusion, many agency managers appointed by Trump are advising employees not to comply with the email, citing privacy and security concerns. Dave says, as a person of color who joined the federal service after serving in the military, he's also concerned that diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives are being terminated.
If two people walk into an office, one person was of color and the other person was not, they probably both have similar qualifications, but that person of color worked just a slight bit harder. There has been statistics that have proven in the past that they tend to favor their white candidate.
Trump has claimed that DEI initiatives intended to help people in less favored groups succeed are themselves a form of discrimination. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
In in what's been dubbed a Valentine's Day massacre, Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, has fired 1,000 National Park Service employees from the nation's 63 national parks, plus another 2,000 U.S. Forest Service workers. Additional cuts target Bureau of Land Management's 245 million acres on other federal public lands. The action is creating havoc, including here in California, which has more national parks than any other state. At Yosemite, where the cuts have forced temporary closure of four popular campgrounds, park employees hung an upside-down flag, a universal symbol of distress, atop El Capitan as crowds gathered for the annual popular firefall event. Gavitt Carpenter, a Yosemite maintenance worker who supplied that flag, told the San Francisco Chronicle, "It's not sustainable if we want to keep the parks open. We're bringing attention to the parks, which are every American's properties." Alex Wild is now the only ranger at Devil's Postpile National Monument in California who is certified as an emergency medical technician. He told NBC, "I'm the only person available to rescue someone, to do CPR, to carry them out from a trail if they got injured. The cuts could mean life or death for someone who's having an emergency," he says. Fire prevention workers have also been let go, including Michael Mayerhofer, a Forest Service trail maintenance worker at the Bob Marshall Wilderness in Montana. He says his crew was dubbed a fire militia for its efforts to help with fires in the district, ranging from extinguishing abandoned campfires to aiding in larger wildfire suppression, Montana Free Press reports. Florissant Fossil Beds National Monument in Colorado has been forced to close 2 days a week due to lack of staffing now, the site posted on Facebook, while visitors to Zion National Park in Utah and many other parks found long lines of vehicles due to not enough staff to man entry booths, CNN and other media report. Wrangell St. Elias National Park and Preserve in Alaska, which encompasses more than 14 million acres, has had the only bush pilot fired. Bill Wade, executive director of the Association of National Park Rangers, told CNN, he asks, "Now how do we protect the wildlife and detect poaching activities or find somebody that's overdue in the park or climbers in distress and so forth?" Without enough rangers to patrol vast areas such as Yellowstone National Park, environmentalists fear poaching of endangered or threatened wildlife and destruction of sensitive plant species. Beth Pratt, California director of the National Wildlife Federation, recalls that when parks were closed during the COVID-19 pandemic and didn't have staffers, people were cutting down Joshua trees at Joshua National Park, she recalls, adding that graffiti, trash, and driving on protected meadowlands also occurred. Tim Whitehouse, executive director of Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, told NPR, "There's no real staffing plan. It's chaotic, and there's no leadership from the Secretary of the Interior." Fired workers accused DOGE of lying in claims of poor performance reviews, with many saying they had positive recent reviews. Andrea Townsend, a fired Yosemite specialist on carnivores, says it's a complete lie. Richard Midget, an IT specialist in Yellowstone who was also fired on February 14th, says he's done great work, including helping optimize Yellowstone's communication system and developing computer code to streamline onboarding and offboarding of employees. He believes his firing is both unwarranted and illegal. The layoffs present hardships for the thousands of employees let go, since most were low paid and moved long distances to work for the Park or Forest Service and now have no alternative jobs in the area. The National Federation of Federal Employees, the union representing Forest Service and National Park Service workers, has filed a lawsuit seeking to reverse the firings of those and other federal agency employees, a total the union said could impact 500,000 federal workers, according to the Montana Free Press. The suit contends that DOGE and an executive order signed by President Donald Trump violates federal law outlining how federal workforce reductions must be handled, which requires action by Congress. The union's February 14th filing in U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia states there is no statute that expressly authorizes the president to slash roughly one quarter of the federal workforce, imperiling the statutory missions that Congress has assigned to federal agencies. The suit also contends that the executive branch's efforts to hobble agencies that Congress created by carrying out mass firings and a pressure campaign for resignations violates separation of power principles. Since the initial Valentine's Day mass firings, the Trump administration has backtracked partially, agreeing to hire nearly 3,000 seasonal workers for the summer season, Associated Press reports. But seasonal jobs are entry-level and won't make up for management-level employees fired, says Kristen Brengel, senior vice president of government affairs at the National Parks Conservation Association. Brengel told CNN, "You really can't have the seasonals without the other full-time staff people who are helping to manage them." Brengel notes that national parks were already short-staffed before the recent layoffs, operating with 20% fewer employees than in 2010. There was no fat to trim, she asserts. The cuts also come after the Trump administration has voiced support for opening up federal lands, including national forests, to mining, logging, oil, and gas drilling. Former National Parks employee Midget says, "It feels like if nothing is done to prevent this administration from dismantling our public lands and the support behind them, we could very well lose access to the trails, the mountains, the plains, and the wildlife that we all love so dearly." 20 congressional Democrats have signed a letter calling the cuts damaging and short-sighted and warning that the mass layoffs could cause staffing chaos in national parks and even lead to closure of some parks entirely. But Democrats lack power since Republicans control both houses of Congress and the presidency. While most Republicans have been silent on the issue, Republican Senator Susan Collins from Maine has voiced concerns over the impacts on Acadia National Park in her state. Bill Wade, executive director of the Association of National Park Rangers, believes it's up to the public to take action and save America's most beloved places. "It's clear that the people of this country really love their national parks," he told CNN, "and now it's time for them to do something about it." Reporting for East County Magazine from KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
Grossmont Union High School District's board has voted 4-1 to fire 49 credentialed teachers, including all high school librarians, despite vocal objections from a large crowd at the February 27th meeting held at El Cajon Valley High School. The board ignored the crowd of some 600 people present, including protesting students, teachers, classified staff, librarians, and mental health workers. The board majority also ignored a petition that has over 1,800 signatures of people opposed to these firings. The board made these drastic cuts even though the district's reserves are 13.7%, which is 4.5 times higher than the minimum amount required by the state. The board blamed the cuts on declining enrollment, a point disputed by some speakers and one trustee. In addition to firing all 9 high school librarians, the board majority voted to eliminate 10 assistant or vice principal positions, 8 English teachers, 4 special education teachers, and a smattering of others teaching various other subjects. Although the district is issuing pink slips to the educators being laid off, it's possible the board could rescind its action and have the terminated instructors return next year if it chooses to do so. The cuts follow on the heels of recent votes to eliminate 61 certified and classified jobs and close the district's child care center. At the meeting, there were 90 speaker cards submitted, but the board restricted speakers to just 2 minutes each, with a total of only 40 minutes allowed, so only about 20 members of the public were actually allowed to speak. Board President Dr. Gary Woods vacated the room multiple times for recesses due to the boisterous audience. James Messina, president of the Grossmont Education Association, the teachers' union, said that declining enrollment has not affected revenues since last year the district banked a record-ending balance of over $100 million. He warned that the cuts will mean increasing class sizes to 38 students, which he predicts will harm students and reduce graduation rates. He said that for the past 20 years, Grossmont has saved money through attrition and retirements when revenues are tight, as other districts also do. Laura Preble, a former high school librarian, said most kids need an adult other than their parents, adding that librarians make connections with kids, and the connections are the root of education. Granite Hills High School sight learning specialist Gavin Preston called the staff cuts, especially the decision to eliminate all district librarians, horrifying. He also criticized the absence of any consultation with sight administrators and teachers before these decisions were made by trustees who don't work with students. Jay Steiger, a teacher and former candidate for the GUHSD board who has chaired the district's bond oversight committee, said there is no need for the layoffs, adding that harm done from previous cuts has not yet been rectified. Guidance counselor Susan Lusk has not lost her job, but she lamented that she will be trying to absorb the mess that you're leaving behind for us. She said classrooms don't even have enough space to accommodate all the desks needed if class sizes are increased from 36 to 47 students or more. Brent Inerva stated, "In my job as a digital learning coach, I was able to work with teachers and help them overcome their fears of technology until you decided it was best to cut my position," he told the board. A student from Monte Vista High School noted, according to the school report card at her school, reading proficiency is down to 44%, while district-wide proficiency is down to 66%, meaning out of 100 students, only 66 can read at grade level. Maria Schrembe gave her a lot of time to a student from Santana High School who said, "School psychologists and counselors have made school a safer place for me." The student added that cutting those jobs puts some students at risk of losing the only mental health support they have. When the 40 minutes of public speaking time ended, audience members clamored, "Let us speak," prompting another recess. During the break, concerned parents and students spoke out regarding alleged weaponization of ideology against students. Many of these students were part of the LGBTQ+ community who expressed disdain toward callousness of board members. The students spoke out against more cuts to mental health services. One student even recalled a friend who committed suicide. After one audience disruption, Board President Gary Woods moved the board discussion to a back room, allowing only media to be present. As board members left the room, shouts could be heard from the audience, including "cowards," "recall," "shame on you," and "vote them out." The governing board voted 4-1 in favor of the resolution, with trustees Gary Woods, Scott Eckert, Robert Shield, and Jim Kelly voting yes, and Chris Veit voting no. The 4 yes votes all came from conservative Republicans, while the lone no vote was cast by a Democrat. Veit, the only member opposed to the action, said the cuts are not financially necessary and suggested reserves could be tapped if needed. He said schools are already understaffed, adding, "These kids need more services. We need to retain these people and build up this district." The governing board members left through the back door without the rest of them explaining their votes, though Colin McGlashan, the district's communications director, later told KUSI, "It's about looking down the road at what's in the best interest of the district." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is John Tidwell with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat. Hamul Casino is changing its name to Hamul Casino Resort. In May, the resort will open its new 16-story hotel, which has 200 rooms and 52 guest suites, as well as numerous leisure activities. Amenities will include a rooftop pool and hot tub, cabanas, rooftop bar, restaurant, full-service spa and salon, a fitness center, a restaurant with panoramic views of the Hamul Mountains, retail space, meeting and banquet facilities. Guests will have access to the hotel and its amenities through a pedestrian sky bridge. Erica Pinto, chairwoman of the Hamul Indian Village, says the hotel marks a proud moment in our tribe's journey and further supports our continued dedication to self-sufficiency, adding, "We're building a legacy that honors our community while inviting visitors to experience the beauty and hospitality of our ancestral lands." Opened in 2016, the Hamul Casino is owned and operated by Hamul Indian Village Development Corporation, a wholly owned enterprise of the tribe. Hamul Casino supports more than 1,400 permanent jobs throughout the region. To learn more about Hamul Casino Resort, you can visit www.hamulcasino.com.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
Former El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasso and his wife Jessica appeared via video at a San Diego Superior Court hearing last week, asking the court to set aside arrest bench warrants ordered back in May of 2023. Those warrants were issued after the Kalashas were found guilty of criminal contempt of court and ordered to report in September to serve 8 days in jail, but they failed to appear. The judge last week refused to let the Kalashas off the hook after hearing arguments on both sides. The Kalashas indicated back in 2023 that traveling to San Diego would be unsafe for Jessica because she was pregnant. She appeared in last week's court video with a toddler on her lap. However, attorney and plaintiff Lena Chari said she had video of the Kalashas attending a wedding in San Diego around the time they were supposed to be reporting for jail. She objected to any further delays, stating this is their sixth attempt to try and dismiss their warrants. Then Kalasho fired back, "That's not true." Judge Wendy Behem made clear that while she would set aside the bench warrants for now, this does not terminate the guilty convictions for contempt charges. The judge then indicated that a new date must be set for the couple to appear and serve their jail sentences. Failure to do so will result in reissuance of the arrest warrants, the judge warned. Kalasho asked for a hearing in late November or December when he said the couple planned to visit relatives over the holidays here. The judge insisted such a long delay would not be allowed. Kalasho told the judge, "I live half the year in North Carolina and half the year in Dubai." He has been working under the pseudonym Chef Benjamin Epicure at Smithmore Castle, a luxury hotel and wedding venue in North Carolina that he claims to run on social media posts. According to a Facebook page for Benjamin Epicure, he is also currently employed at the Dubai Creek Gold and Yacht Club residences in Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Ultimately, the judge ordered both Ben and Jessica Kalasho to report into Superior Court Department 66 on June 9th at 8:30 a.m. to serve out their 8-day sentences in jail. The contempt of court charges come after Kalasho was found by the court to have defamed Lena Chari in retaliation after she sued him for damages suffered when a car in a car wash he owned crashed into Chari's business next door. The Kalashas were found guilty of multiple counts of contempt for violating court orders, lying under oath, failing to produce financial documents pursuant to court orders, failing to appear for mandatory court appearances, and unlawfully interfering with court proceedings by providing false, misleading, or obstructive testimony under oath. A court ordered the Kalashas to pay damages to Chari, but the couple stonewalled during a series of 15 judgment debtor examinations, where the Kalashas were supposed to answer questions on record about their financial assets. Chari then filed an order asking the court to find the Kalashas criminally guilty of contempt in the civil case, a tool rarely used in a civil procedure. But the judge concluded that the Kalashas' failure to fulfill the requirements of the judgment justified finding them guilty on criminal counts and ordering them both briefly incarcerated. If the pair shows up on June 9th as ordered, their 8-day incarceration is slated to commence. Left unresolved is the question of how Chari may recover assets to satisfy her civil judgment against the Kalashas, or what will happen if the Kalashas fail to appear again. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is John Tidwell with a health alert. San Diego County public health officials are investigating a suspected case of bird flu in a house cat from East County. Preliminary test results show the cat, which got sick and died in mid-January, was positive for bird flu. The indoor cat ate raw pet food that is suspected as the source of the infection. This is the first case of bird flu in a cat in San Diego County. Several other cases have happened in cats throughout the state, and all are suspected to be the result of eating raw food or raw milk. Bird flu is a highly contagious virus that can sicken or kill birds and other animals. In 2024, there were 6 cases of bird flu in wild gulls in San Diego County. No wildlife cases have been confirmed so far in 2025. While rare, it can spread to people when the virus gets in someone's eyes, nose, or mouth, or when it is inhaled. No local cases in humans have been reported, and the risk to people remains low. Dr. Seema Shah, medical director of the county's Epidemiology and Immunization Services branch, says, "Bird flu has been devastating for wildlife populations around the globe. Poultry and dairy cattle in our county has infrequently affected people and cats. The county is actively monitoring wild birds and expanding testing, along with keeping tabs on people exposed to those animals in case they exhibit symptoms. While cases of bird flu in people and cats are rare, there are steps you can take to lower the risk of bird flu for yourself, family, and pets. Avoid consuming raw milk or dairy products or feeding them to your pets because raw milk is not pasteurized. Pasteurization is a heating process that kills harmful pathogens such as bird flu, salmonella, E. coli, and listeria. Avoid feeding raw pet food products to pets. Thoroughly wash your hands with soap and water when handling raw foods like meats and poultry and cook them to recommended temperature before serving. Avoid touching sick or dead birds or animals and report them to animal control. Don't let your pets eat or touch sick or dead birds or animals. Keep your cats indoors and supervise dogs outdoors. On the West Coast, house cats have died from bird flu caused by consuming raw milk or raw food products in Santa Barbara County, San Mateo, Los Angeles, Washington, and Oregon. Signs of bird flu in cats include neurologic problems such as coordination, tremors, seizures, or blindness, loss of appetite, discharge from the eyes and nose, breathing fast, sneezing, or coughing. Pet owners should tell their veterinarian if their pet is sick and has eaten a raw food diet, has interacted with poultry or dairy cattle, or hunts wild birds or other wild animals. People most at risk for bird flu are farm workers, people with backyard flocks, wildlife workers, and those who work around animals. Those who work with ill animals can use personal protective equipment to reduce their likelihood of exposure to the virus. Owners of backyard chickens or other birds should also take precautions to protect their flocks. There is no cure for bird flu, which has resulted in euthanasia of millions of chickens nationwide exposed to bird flu in both commercial operations and backyard flocks to prevent spread of the disease.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery bringing you this week's Destination East County. March brings some merry events, including farm tours, a stargazing party, live music concerts, a spring fling business expo, Tomato Mania at the Water Conservation Garden, Daffodil Days in Julian, St. Patrick's Day festivities, Nature Day atop Mount Helix, a Pirates of Penzance production at Grossmont College, a Desert Homes tour in Borrego Springs, and the Price is Right game show at Saquon. Fort Cross Old-Timey Adventures in Santa Isabel, just outside of Julian, is offering farm tour adventures every Saturday this spring. The farm tour adventures include visits with farm animals, an interactive reptile show, archery, tomahawk throwing, paintballs at the Ghost Town Slingshot Range, a jug band, walking trails, tire swings, plant sales, and more. For reservations and tickets, you could visit fortcross.com. Members of the San Diego Astronomy Association invite you to enjoy stargazing at Mission Trails Regional Park on the first Friday every month, starting at dusk. Meet at the far end of the Kumeyaay Lake Campground's day-use parking lot to view the nighttime sky through telescopes, weather permitting. For more information, visit mtrp.org/events. Grossmont College's Concert Band will present a concert on Wednesday, March 5th from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the school's Performing and Visual Arts Center. The ensemble features talented wind and percussion musicians, including students, educators, and community members. You can get more information at grossmont.edu in the events section. On Wednesday, March 5th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce invites you to their 10th Annual Spring Fling Business Expo. This special evening will be held at the Courtyard by Marriott in El Cajon. Guests can meet local business owners and have opportunities to win door prizes and raffle items. For more information, visit lamesachamber.com. Tomato Mania returns to the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College on Friday and Saturday, March 7th and 8th. You can purchase tomato plants, including heirlooms and classics, plus get tips from experts on how to grow the most flavorful tomatoes. The hours are 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on March 7th and 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on March 8th. This year, there's also a tomato cooking class with Chef Nikolai Winkler. Reservations and a fee are required for the class. Another class offers tips on how to collect and store water. For details, you can visit thegarden.org. Friends of the Julian Library will present a concert by Sean Gaskell on the kora. That's a 21-stringed West African harp. The performance, titled Music on the Mountain, will take place on March 7th at 3 p.m. in the Julian branch of the County Library. Gaskell studied under the extensive instruction of Moribo Kuyete and the late Malami Jobarte in Gambia. Many songs featured on the kora preserve an 800-year history dating back to the founding of the Mande Empire. The Grossmont Symphony Orchestra welcomes its new conductor, San Diego Symphony Orchestra violinist Hernan Constantino. His first concert performance, titled Spanish Nights, a Concert of Passion and Fire, will be held on March 7th at 7:30 p.m. in the college's Performing Arts and Visual Center. Maestro Constantino is also on his seventh season as the music director for mainly Mozart with the San Diego Symphony. The Spanish Nights concert will feature works of Ravel, Bizet, and Defala, featuring some of the most iconic and beloved pieces in the Spanish repertoire, from the seductive rhythms of Ravel's Bolero to the dramatic flair of Rimsky-Korsakov's Capriccio Español to the haunting beauty of Bizet's Carmen. For tickets, visit gcccd.universitytickets.com. Julian Farm and Orchard invites you to Daffodil Days, held each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from March 7th through April 17th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. In addition to you-pick daffodils, visitors can also enjoy other activities for a fee, including a petting zoo, rock climbing, swings, picnic areas, a tractor-pulled hayride, and more. Visit julianfarmandorchard.com. Grossmont College's dance department will present Entrances and Exits, a faculty-choreographed, student-performed dance concert on March 8th through 10th at 7:30 p.m. in the Performing and Visual Arts Center. For tickets and more information, you can visit grossmont.edu/events. Mount Helix Park will host Nature Day atop Mount Helix on March 15th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. This event will feature live animals, a butterfly release, booths from over 30 nature organizations, activities, crafts, and a native plant sale. Shuttles for the public are available from Grossmont High School. Get details at mounthelixpark.org. That's mthelixpark.org. The Anza Borrego Desert Natural History Association invites you to the Borrego Home and Garden Tour on Saturday, March 15th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Explore four desert dwellings in the heart of Borrego Springs at your own pace. Each home showcases unique architecture, landscaping, and design elements. Tickets are available online at abdnha.org/garden tour. That stands for the Anza Borrego Desert Natural History Association. Fort Cross, New Julian invites you to St. Patrick's Lucky Adventures March 17th. Participants can kick up your heels at an Irish jig, see snakes like those St. Patrick drove away from Ireland, target sneaky leprechauns at the Ghost Town Slingshot Gallery, and venture into a land of leprechaun magic as you seek to find special treasures. For tickets and more information, you can visit fortcross.com. Hooley's Irish Pubs in La Mesa and Rancho San Diego invites you to don your best green attire to join in celebrating St. Patrick's Day on March 17th with Irish music and more. Details will be posted at hooleys.com. Grossmont College's Theater Arts Department will present The Pirates of Penzance, a musical, on March 20th through 22nd and March 27th through 29th. This stage production of Gilbert and Sullivan's comic opera offers a rollicking good time with endearing pirates, bumbling policemen, zany escapades, and delightfully ridiculous paradoxes. For tickets and details, visit grossmont.edu/events. Alpine Country Crafts and Gifts invites you to a spring festival and Easter celebration at 2156 Alpine Boulevard. The event takes place Thursday, March 20th, Friday, March 21st, and Saturday, March 22nd. The Alwani Middle Eastern Orchestra will perform at Cuyamaca College Samuel Chikati Theater on March 27th at 7:30 p.m. Its mission is to counter negative narratives about the Middle East by showcasing the region's cultural richness through the transformative power of music. For tickets, visit GCCCD, that's Grossmont Community College District, gcccd.universitytickets.com. And finally, an onstage version of the popular TV game show The Price is Right is coming to Sequan with two shows March 29th at 3 p.m. and 8 p.m. Audience members will have a chance to hear their names called and to come on down to win major prizes. Tickets are available at sequan.com. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
Donald Trump and Republicans in Congress ran on a pro-life platform, but it's clear from recent actions of the Trump administration that its leaders don't care about babies. Its actions are putting lives and well-being of millions of infants and children at risk, both around the world and here in the U.S. Cutting off U.S. aid, including food in famine-stricken areas, clean water and medical supplies without notice, for instance, means that millions of children will suffer and thousands may die around the world, according to an analysis by First Funding for Children. Ships laden with food were prohibited from unloading, leaving food to rot rather than save lives of starving children, CBS reports. The United Nations warns of mass death in Sudan from starvation and is seeking donations after the U.S. abruptly cut off all aid. Similarly, Republicans' congressional budget cuts to Medicaid, school lunch programs, and the child tax credit will all harm children. Mass federal firings by the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, include workers who ran child care and Head Start programs, and also ended a program to improve maternal health care for pregnant women, threatening the well-being of their unborn babies. Cuts to medical research will limit access to effective health care treatments and diagnostics for patients and threaten the ability of children's hospitals to provide future groundbreaking cures for children, according to a press release from the organization representing children's hospitals. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the anti-vaxxer named Secretary of Health and Human Services, is considering changing recommendations for childhood vaccines such as measles and polio, an action that, if carried out, could put children at risk of dying or being left paralyzed from devastating and preventable childhood diseases. The Trump administration is also pushing to deport undocumented children who entered the U.S. alone, putting their lives and safety at risk. The administration has also moved to cut off infant assistance funds for migrant babies, as well as legal assistance for unaccompanied minors. Cuts to the Department of Education, which Trump says he ultimately hopes to eliminate, will harm children with disabilities, PBS reports. NBC reports that if Trump is successful in eliminating the Department of Education, it would harm the most vulnerable students, such as by ending federal funding of schools, increasing class sizes for all public school students, eliminating federal funding for students with disabilities, ending civil rights protections for minority students, and grants to assure equal access to education for all children. Eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse is best accomplished by a careful, extended examination of individual programs, not slashing and eliminating entire programs and departments such as USAID and the Department of Education, nor gutting funds for children's health research and successful childhood vaccine programs, nor eliminating child care options for working parents or taking away all protections for vulnerable immigrant children unaccompanied by parents or guardians. These are politics of cruelty, not compassion. If you care about the lives of babies and children, you can let your elected members of Congress know that policies harming children are unacceptable and hypocritical for anyone claiming to be pro-life. Reporting on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Tidwell.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. The number of American farms has fallen 7% over 5 years, and a freeze on National Conservation Service grants could make that worse. Under court order, the Trump administration released $20 million of the $20 billion it froze. But Mike Lavender with the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition says countless farmers still have been left angry and confused by the indiscriminate funding block.
We're seeing contract terminations, contract modifications, harming rural communities, farm families in the long term.
Dan Lotspeech used federal grants to build 3 greenhouses in rural Nevada, where he grows fruits and vegetables for local farmers' markets.
I genuinely think this business wouldn't exist if it was not for the government, the USDA, filling that investor role where it's kind of missing from the private sector.
But Lotspeech says the funding freeze leaves his plans to expand his all-weather farm looking cloudy. The Department of Government Efficiency, led by Elon Musk, has fired thousands of probationary Forest Service workers, citing poor performance, despite positive performance reviews. Alana Newman has more on the impact for rural communities.
Outdoor recreation adds $1 trillion to the economy. But without Forest Service employees to clean bathrooms, maintain trails, and support firefighters, rural communities could lose tourism. Cyrus Isari was terminated at New Mexico's Gila National Forest.
The Gila National Forest is already severely understaffed. This has made it even worse.
No wildland firefighters were terminated, but nearly everyone at the Forest Service is specifically authorized to support firefighting. And Isari says he and the crew were hardly a waste of taxpayer money.
My crew, we are hard workers that are doing so much, and our rural communities depend a lot on us.
I'm Ilana Newman.
This loss of Forest Service support is especially critical, as climate change means more wildfires, and rural communities rarely have the money to prepare. But 2 years ago, Congress and the Biden administration authorized the U.S. Forest Service's Community Wildfire Defense Grant Program. Kelly Pohl leads the nonprofit research group Headwaters Economics.
This program really stands out for successfully getting funding to communities that need the resources and that were really prioritized by Congress.
Since 2022, the program's awarded $420 million to rural communities to reduce fire danger around homes and neighborhoods and implement their own defense projects. But since President Trump announced a federal funding freeze, the program is in limbo, which Pohl says will hurt as fire season ramps up.
And they need the resources now. Wildfires won't wait.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
County officials and community members broke ground last week on a new library branch in Casa de Oro to meet the growing needs of the community. The new library will be located on Campbell Road in Spring Valley, near Spring Valley Academy. At 12,000 square feet, the new library will be twice as large as the current library, which is in a leased location. The facility will also include a 2,000 square foot community room. Other features of the new library will include public computers plus laptops for checkout, high-speed internet access and Wi-Fi throughout the branch, after-hours access for community events, a teen area with study rooms, a children's area with early literacy play equipment, patio space, and a Friends of the Library bookstore, and a designated parking lot. The library is being built on zero net energy and LEED gold standards. This means that the library's solar panels will produce the electricity it needs to operate. The county gathered community input and engaged residents, businesses, and other stakeholders about their needs for the library. This feedback helped to shape the design and types of features planned for this location. The project is funded by the County of San Diego. The new library branch is expected to open in spring of 2026. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
A coalition of environmental groups is suing the Trump administration to reinstate protections against new offshore drilling. President Donald Trump revoked a Biden-era order to withdraw from future drilling 625 million acres of ocean off the Pacific, Eastern Gulf, Atlantic, and Alaska coasts. Devorah Ansell with the Sierra Club says only Congress can revoke protections made by presidents under the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act.
President Trump revoked Biden's protective withdrawals, and the law doesn't allow presidents to revoke or cancel withdrawals of previous presidents. Trump's action is illegal under the statute and also violates the Constitution.
Trump claims more waters should be opened for drilling in order to ensure U.S. energy independence, but advocates say the protections would not affect energy security because much of the Gulf of Mexico is still open to drilling and the U.S. is the largest oil producer in the world. They also contend that expansion of offshore drilling is too big a threat to the marine ecosystem and to multi-billion-dollar coastal economies. Joseph Gordon is campaign director for climate and energy with the nonprofit Oceana.
If you look at the impacts of Deepwater Horizon, offshore drilling is one of the most destructive activities that could ever happen off a coast. That's what's at stake. Wherever there's drilling, there'll be spilling.
A second lawsuit asks the court to uphold Obama-era offshore protections in the Arctic, protections Mr. Trump tried to undo during his first term. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A federal judge on February 24th in Maryland has temporarily blocked Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, agents from conducting raids and targeting and arresting migrants inside those places of worship run by organizations that filed the lawsuit. The lawsuit challenged an order by the Trump administration to allow ICE enforcement in sensitive locations, including places of worship, a change to a longstanding federal policy which prohibited enforcement actions in places of worship as well as schools and hospitals. The religious groups challenged this change as unconstitutional. The ruling came down on the side of the religious groups who sued the Trump administration after asking federal courts to intervene, although the order was less broad than the groups sought for now. President Donald Trump ran on a platform of tougher immigration enforcement and has promised the largest deportation effort in history. But educators and religious leaders say those efforts have already gone too far and are also violating rights of American citizens. U.S. District Judge Theodore Chuang ordered the Department of Homeland Security and its subdivision ICE not to conduct immigration enforcement actions in or near any place of worship associated with a case brought by Quakers, Baptists, Sikhs, Mennonites, and Jewish congregations, but not the nationwide ban at all places of worship that the plaintiffs sought. Chuang's ruling is another setback for President Trump's goal of strengthening immigration enforcement and conducting mass deportations of migrants who are in the country without legal authorization. Chuang said the policy likely violates the group's First Amendment rights, which protect religion and freedom of association, as well as the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, a federal law which restricts government activities that impinge on religious practices. The judge emphasized that his analysis was tailored to the houses of worship that filed suit because they explicitly welcome immigrants regardless of legal status and would logically be targets for those potential Trump administration enforcement actions. Chuang's action means that about 1,700 places of worship associated with the plaintiffs' organizations in 35 states, as well as the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, will be temporarily spared from immigration enforcement operations. But other churches and places of worship will not. The policy change was among the Trump administration's immigration actions criticized by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, although that organization did not join the multiple lawsuits brought by faith communities. Sky Perriman, president and CEO of Democracy Forward, a group representing the plaintiffs, said in a statement, "For decades, the government has recognized that everyone, no matter their immigration status, should be able to attend houses of worship without fear of a warrantless government raid. Religious institutions should not have to go to court to fight for the right to worship and associate freely that is enshrined in our Constitution," Perriman said. "Our plaintiffs represent a unique and diverse coalition of religious groups that have been at the forefront in protecting values of religious liberty for centuries." He voiced gratitude to the court for acting to limit what he called this unlawful and harmful policy. J. Kevin Appleby, senior fellow for policy at the Center for Migration Studies of New York and the former director of migration policy for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, has called the judge's temporary restraining order a good sign, adding that while the judge did not issue a nationwide ban on enforcement at churches, he opened the door to that possibility in the future. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The county-run safe parking site on Magnolia in unincorporated El Cajon One of two East County sites set up to help homeless people living in their vehicles is temporarily closed for renovations. The improvements will include picnic and meeting areas, a dog run, improved bath and shower areas, and permanent structures to house staff offices. The site is anticipated to reopen in summer 2025, says Fernando Lopez, with San Diego County's Health and Human Services Agency. People experiencing homelessness in their vehicles are currently being served at the Bancroft Safe Parking site located in Spring Valley. The El Cajon site opened in 2022 and Bancroft in 2024. It has space for 27 cars to park overnight starting at 5 p.m. The site has security along with clean restrooms, hot showers, a small kitchen, and a dog run for people with pets. Dinner and breakfast are provided. The lot is operated by county contractor Dreams for Change. Those in the program are also paired with a Dreams for Change caseworker to help them find housing options. Gilly and Henry drove their black sedan onto the county's Bancroft Safe Parking site in Spring Valley in January, and since then, they say they've been able to breathe a sigh of relief. The couple spent months staying at various shelters or sleeping in their car on the side of the road after increased rent and a job loss forced them out of their long-term rental apartment and into their vehicle. Gilly explains, "No matter how we tried to keep our boat afloat, it was impossible." She says being at Bancroft Safe Parking makes a whole world of difference to know that at 5 o'clock, we can come here, get a shower, there's a heater, there's coffee, oatmeal for the morning. It's a relief. Gilly and Henry were referred to Bancroft Safe Parking by a County Office of Homeless Solutions outreach worker. Dejana Beck, director of the County Office of Homeless Solutions, says safe parking lots provide people with a place to park and sleep for the night without the risk of being towed or asked to move. Participants also have support to get things like documents in order, reunifying with family, and, of course, finding a more permanent housing solution. The goal is to help the families, couples, and other people find more stable housing. Pets are also welcome. On average, residents stay at Bancroft Safe Parking between 3 to 6 months. For Gilly and Henry, their wait is over as they move into a studio apartment thanks to support from the program. The county's Bancroft and Magnolia Safe Parking sites are part of the county's broader efforts to expand emergency housing options for people experiencing homelessness in the unincorporated communities. Next up, the county aims to open Troy Street sleeping cabins in Lemon Grove in 2026, though that project has faced community opposition. You can learn more about programs and resources by Googling Office of Homeless Solutions on the San Diego County website. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.